Blog Talk Radio.
How you doing?
All right. And how was your weekend?
Weekend was great. You know, Brady's back, and Martellus Bennett looks better than he ever did in the Chicago uniform. So it was a great weekend.
That great weekend for some, not for all of us. Let me remind you, being a Bears fan, I kind of wish we had Martellus Bennett back on our field for that one. So
yeah,
let's just go ahead.
I have a long. I was just going to say, I have a long memory. In case any of the Instagram followers who got in a fight with me about Martellus back in the preseason are listening, I commented back to a couple of them today. They all called him floppy foot and said he had no hands. And I don't know, he's looking pretty good so far in New England, so we'll take him.
I'm gonna say it's all Brady. And, you know, Martellus Bennett just happens to be out there. And, I mean, the first touchdown, basically he just walked right in. I mean, any of us could have done that. With Brady at the helm. So we'll give you some props there for Brady coming back. All right, let's get rolling. We got a lot to cover today. So first, the game. So let's start with the Philadelphia Eagles at the Detroit Lions. This was actually an interesting game because up to this point, the Eagles were undefeated and they were coming off a bye, and we thought that they were going to be really prepared for the lowly Detroit Lions, the only team to lose to my Chicago Bears. But it ended up being the Lions that were prevailing at 24-23, and there was a lot of field goals at the end of the day. But it was really surprising seeing as how the Eagles had the second-best pass defense in the NFL. So tell us, Ryan, what are your takeaways from the game between the Eagles and the Lions?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the double-edged sword that it is starting a rookie quarterback, right? You know, people think that, you know, that they were strong, or they were going to come strong off the bye. And I think with seasoned veteran teams, you do see a team come off the bye week, you know, much sharper and more focused and ready for a game. However, when you have a rookie, you know, I know he's been a coach in the league for a while, but a rookie head coach, and you have a rookie quarterback at the helm, and you have a team that's exceeded expectations to this point, and you come out of a bye week, you know, sometimes, you know, there's really two schools of thought. And, you know, obviously you never want to go into the bye after a bad loss because you don't want to sit around thinking about it for 2 weeks. But when you're a young team like Philadelphia, who's, again, kind of defying expectations, I think it can be equally harmful to go into it, you know, in the way that they did, because now you have 2 weeks to kind of sit back and hear some praise and kind of think to yourselves, you know, we got this, and, you know, start to kind of believe your own hype a little bit. And then you come out and, you know, the game gets away from you pretty quickly. So I think you saw that, but I think the most positive sign you can have as a Philadelphia fan is that they did come back. And, yeah, they choked it away at the end, which was disappointing to see, because I thought it would have been a cool story if, you know, the legend of Carson Wentz continued to grow with a great comeback there. But they made some mistakes down the stretch, and I think kind of overlooked was just because of the fumble. It's kind of overlooked that Carson Wentz, I mean, there's no business throwing that ball. It's first down, double covered, in the double coverage, and you still have plenty of time. There was no need to go for you know, a chunk yardage play on that. So that part's disappointing, but again, he's a rookie, and you're going to have some growing pains. And at the end of the day, you're in, you know, you're still somewhat in the driver's seat in your division, and you know, you got two kind of mediocre teams in that division. The Cowboys look good right now, but overall they're still sitting in a good spot. And you know, I think you've got a good team, and you know, I'd expect to see them bounce back this week.
Yeah, I have to agree with that, and I have to say, you know, part of it was Ryan Matthews fumbling it away. I mean, obviously that had nothing to. I mean, it has something to do with the offense, but it really is more Ryan Matthews than anything else that caused that game to kind of slip away at the end. But Carson Wentz, you know, on the year has the at this point. Sixth highest passer rating of any quarterback in the NFL. The only quarterback to have a better passer rating, and this will be actually kind of funny, but it's Matt Ryan. Sam Bradford, the old quarterback from Philadelphia, now having great success in Minnesota. Brian Hoyer, the backup from Chicago, who is soon to be instilled as the starter in Chicago, regardless of the health of Jay Cutler, and Phillip Rivers and Ben Roethlisberger. So, you know, that's some pretty good company there. You know, they've played four games now. 103.5 passer rating is pretty solid, I'd say. So I think you're right. There is some of the dangers there of starting a rookie quarterback, but I think he's doing everything they're telling him to do, asking him to do, and he's doing it quite well. So let's turn to the other side of the ball. What do you think about the Detroit Lions, though? Matt Stafford actually did not perform terribly well, but did get the three touchdowns, two of which were really gimmies to Theo Riddick early in the game. But you think that the Detroit Lions are now on the bounce back?
No, I don't buy into the Detroit Lions. I never have with Matt Stafford at the helm. Matt Stafford's one of those guys, and you hear me reference this a lot, but I do think that the average NFL fan, and even sometimes, you know, the guys who kind of work in the fantasy world more, that are more fantasy analysts than they are NFL analysts, will get caught up in the hype of some of these quarterbacks who aren't great quarterbacks. You know, Matt Stafford is a nice fantasy quarterback, but Matt Stafford's not leading you on any deep playoff run. So he can sling the ball over the yard, but I don't think he's the brightest or the best decision maker to lead your team. You know, especially with Golden Tate taking a step back and no Megatron, and I'm not a big Marvin Jones fan, so I think they have an average, and that's being kind, receiving core. You know, Ebron can never stay healthy, and then, you know, I do have a Notre Dame soft spot for Theo Riddick, but you know, he's not an every down back, so they still don't really have a true run game. He's great in the pass catch and roll. If they had a true first and second down thumper, then you know, I think he'd even be more useful to them. But you know, Amir Abdullah still can't seem to put it together. So I would still be hesitant to really buy in at all on anything the Lions are doing.
Right. Well, Amir Abdullah obviously on injured reserve, so done for the year with a torn ligament in his foot. Dwayne Washington also suffering from injuries to his ankle and to his foot. Who knows when he's going to be back? He is kind of limited, maybe going to have some limited practice. Trash heap, I should say, because the Baltimore Ravens decided to jettison him in favor of Terrence West, which tells you how much they all thought about Justin Forsett. But what do you think about that? Do you think Justin Forsett is a guy who's going to help the Detroit Lions, or do you think this is just nothing?
Terrence West couldn't emerge in Cleveland, even though I loved him coming out of the draft. If you lost your starting position to Terrence West, then yeah, you're probably not going to be the answer anybody's running woes. Plus, it's sneaky because of how late he kind of came on. But Forsett is you know, he's much older than I think a lot of people realize. So he's on the back nine, and he was never an elite running back to begin with.
So let me go ahead and juxtapose that with another guy. Who interestingly, I should say, had not much success in his previous team, but then managed to break out in his new team. Then that's Deion Lewis. You know, actually spent obviously some time with the Eagles and never really got anywhere. Broke out big time with the Patriots last year. Probably will be back later this season. Do you think that is something that Justin Forsett could do, or do you think that that's basically the system that's going to be helping Deion Lewis and not? And that's not something that's in place for Justin Forsett.
Yeah, I mean, Deion Lewis is a rare case. Deion Lewis is also a guy who, you know, had a lot of injury issues in his life. You know, Dave Wanstead really ran him into the ground in Pittsburgh. So, you know, he kind of got lucky with a fresh start in New England, but then, you know, the injuries kind of reared their heads. And the age difference, I think, does matter there. And then lastly, you know, Bill Belichick finds a way to get the most out of players, and that's not exactly what I think of when I think of Caldwell.
All right. So that game, let's move on to our next game, which is the Houston Texans at the Minnesota Vikings. There we had an interesting but not unsurprising result. The Vikings managed to win 31-13. They dominated basically the entire game. That Vikings defense really showed that they are for real. So tell me, what are your takeaways from that game?
Yeah, first off, I would say that I have a couple quick ones. The Minnesota Vikings defense is now, until further notice, I mean, I guess, I guess it's a battle between them and Denver. But I the way they're playing right now, especially the way they're playing in the new U.S. Bank Stadium, I think they're the best defense in football. I think top down, all around, it's almost impossible to move the ball on them. I think with the Houston Texans, you're starting to see why Osweiler should not have got that money. And I don't have the stats in front of me, but the home and away splits, at least from the eye test, is that Brock Osweiler is an above average to good quarterback at home, and he's pretty average or below average on the road. Any quarterback's obviously gonna be better at home than on the road, but his disparity is pretty bad. He's the game in New England and now the game in Minnesota. They looked inept. And then lastly, obviously me and you talk a lot about Notre Dame players. Will Fuller has been, I wouldn't say sensational, but he's had a pretty nice rookie season so far. However, the one thing that plagued him in Notre Dame was the drops. And you saw a really bad one the other day. You saw one or two bad ones in New England. So, at times it looks like he's completely cured that issue. But then you've also seen it spots over the first 5 weeks here where he still has that ability to drop a pass right in his hands. So I'd be concerned if I'm them or from Houston, and except for the fact that you're in the AFC South. So I guess that's a great equalizer in the end.
Absolutely. And actually, to add a little bit of color there, Brock Osweiler, the 29th rated quarterback by passer rating in the NFL. The only quarterbacks that are worse than him listed here, Blaine Gabbert and Ryan Fitzpatrick. And he's actually worse than the likes of Case Keenum, Blake Bortles, who hasn't been so great, Ryan Tannehill, since we can they all agree I think is terrible, Cody Kessler. There's a lot of people here that have a higher passer rating than Brock Osweiler and are getting paid a fraction of what Brock Osweiler is getting paid. So there's definitely a problem there. Now, if you look at from the perspective of yards allowed per game, Seattle, Philadelphia, all these other teams are still very good. Minnesota, though, is consistently good across the top of the board, fourth over all when it comes to yards allowed per game. They actually are one of the best scoring offenses. They allow only 12 points approximately per game. And they're pretty much deadly against a ground game, allowing only 77 yards per game on the ground. So really, Minnesota, I think, is the real story here. Their defense is amazing. Sam Bradford, as I mentioned earlier, second highest passer rating in the NFL so far this year, is amazing. He's really kind of stepped in there and found new life there. He made Thielen relevant, which is amazing. Without Stephen Diggs around, we all thought that it'd be a problem. Wasn't a problem for him. He used everybody at his disposal, except for, unfortunately, another former Notre Damer, Kyle Rudolph, who didn't get much love on Sunday. But so it's very interesting to me. But what about the Houston Texans? Now we all know about the Minnesota Vikings. We're going to talk about them again in a second. But what about the Houston Texans? Do you think they are done? Do you think they have a chance to take the AFC South, or do you think that this is really time to start rebuilding?
I don't think they have to do an entire rebuild. I think they need to address some issues on the defensive side of the ball. Eventually you got to stop counting on somebody like Brian Cushing, who can't stay on the field. Jadeveon Clowney got a lot of early season and preseason praise, but has been kind of disappearing the last couple of games. Obviously JJ's out now, JJ, when your best player was JJ Watt is down, it's hard to compete. But again, you're in the AFC South, which the two South divisions in both conferences are the dumpster fires of each conference. So at the end of the day, you can win that division at 9-7. The Colts are not going to establish themselves, and the Titans, I still think, are a couple years away. And then you have Jacksonville, who was a preseason darling, who I really bought in hard on. But with a 1-3 start, they haven't looked great either. So You know, 9-7 should win that division, so they should sneak into the playoffs again. But they're still probably 2 or 3 years away from really building something viable to challenge anybody in the AFC playoff picture.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that's there's a lot to talk about there. But we're going to get back to the Minnesota Vikings in a little bit, and we're going to go ahead and turn to our next, which is the Atlanta Falcons at the Denver Broncos. Another not-so-surprising game in light of the fact that Paxton Lynch has made Wade his first career start in place of Trevor Siemian because of a sore shoulder or an injury to his rotator cuff. The Falcons prevailed 23-16. Interesting all the way around. A lot of stuff to talk about here. Tell us, what were your takeaways from the Falcons versus the Broncos?
Yeah, it's that's a statement win for the Falcons. I gave them 0% chance to go in there and win that game. Denver's lights out on defense, obviously. They're especially lights out in that building. Probably one of the top three best home field advantages in the NFL. So I was surprised, to be honest. I think it was surprising the game Tevin Coleman had. You know, he with his health concerns with, I believe it's sickle cell he has, he was worried he wouldn't even be able to play given how high, the altitude is there in Mile High. So, the fact that he came out and had the game he had was pretty impressive. And then, you know, Vic Beasley on the defense was surprising, you know, a lot of talk over, you know, over a period of time now that he was a bust. But he, you know, I think it was 3.5 sacks he had on Sunday. So he really, really brought it for that game. Really, you know, saved it all up to have a breakout game there. And I think the biggest thing you're going to see with Denver, that hasn't really reared its head yet with Trevor Siemian, that you could see, with Paxton Lynch or even when Trevor comes back, that, you know, last year, even though Peyton had a horrible QBR, you still had probably, you know, I'll give him the second best quarterback mind in the league. I'm going to leave number one to Brady, but you know, somebody who knows how to check you into the right runs, which is something that I don't think those two can really do. So even if he wasn't playing, you know, great at quarterback last year, Peyton Manning was still getting them into the most successful or best chance to succeed type play, which is something the offense is going to miss this year. And you know, they're off to a good start, 4-1, and the defense is playing great. But at some point, you got to have. You know, somewhat of a semblance of an NFL offense to win long term in this league.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, what's interesting is that, you know, the Denver Broncos clearly one of the best defenses in the league. They paced the league of 19th on the season. They allow the third least yards per game to passing to opposing quarterbacks, 186 yards per game. So they are absolutely solid. But you're right. You know, if you don't have an offense, there's only so much you can do. You know, I don't want to use Seattle Seahawks as an example, but they are an example of what can be done with a really good defense and a mediocre offense. And Trevor Siemian actually is a better fit there. But what I'm interested in hearing from you, Ryan, is what do you think about Devontae Booker? So I've never been a big fan of C.J. Anderson. He was not great for the majority of last year, came on strong at the end and got a lot of hype going into the preseason, coming into the beginning of this season. Devontae Booker was someone I liked in the draft, who I liked also in the Denver Broncos offensive scheme. He's starting to step up. He had only 3 less touches than C.J. Anderson over this last weekend and actually was quite a bit more productive, particularly in the passing game. So what do you think about Devontae Booker?
Yeah, you know, preseason, I had him pegged as a guy who could, you know, overtake the starter, you know, the veteran starter on his team. But I just the Denver running back woes is a confusing thing to me, because, you know, it's just one of those things that the NFL pundits will shove down your throat what a genius and stretch with the stretch run in the run play game that Gary Kubiak is. But you know, but between Monty Ball and Ronnie Hillman and C.J. Anderson, I mean, they've literally, C.J. Anderson, like you said, had, it was pretty much from the New England game in week 10 through the playoffs. So it was about 6 regular season and 3 postseason games, like a 9-game stretch that he's been a good running back. you know, in I think this is his third year now. So, you know, for whatever reason, they have a hard time incorporating these young running backs who they're high on. So, do I like him personally? Yes. Do I think he's got a good skill set? Yes. But I'm just wary of their ability to incorporate or really establish, you know, an every down back who can carry an offense there right now.
All right. Okay. Let's finish off on that and move on to our next game, which is the Cincinnati Bengals at the Dallas Cowboys. Another interesting game where Dallas got off to a really hot start, really took control of that game early on. The Bengals were in catch-up mode pretty much the entire time. And what's interesting to me about this game is the fact that the Dallas Cowboys basically put the brakes on in the second half. They only they basically did all their scoring essentially in the first half and in the early third quarter, and then that was basically it. They ended up prevailing 28-14 and now 4-1 in the NFC East. So tell me, Ryan, what do you think about that? What are your takeaways from the Bengals at the Cowboys?
Bengals are still one of the softest teams in the NFL. They can't win a big road game. They can't win big primetime games. That's who they will always be. Marvin Lewis shouldn't have a job. I don't know how he still has a job. So pretty predictable drubbing for them to go in there. And then on the Dallas side, you know, obviously Ezekiel Elliott looks like the real deal. And then as far as the quarterback situation, you have Jerry Jones coming out this week and saying that unequivocally Tony Romo is going to be the starter when he comes back. And I think that's foolish, and I think that's why the Cowboys are the Cowboys. You know, one quick thing I'll say, take it back to the Patriots like I so often do, but, you know, people talk so many times about what a gutsy call it was for Belichick to play Tom Brady over Drew Bledsoe, or stay with Tom Brady. Drew Bledsoe is the Patriots' old equivalent to Tony Romo. You know what you have. You have a guy who's got a big arm, you have a guy who'll put up stats, and you have a guy that can win you some games. Bledsoe won more playoff games in his career than Romo. But either way, they were both choke artists. Bledsoe routinely would get the ball back down by one score and drive you about 30, 40 yards, just close enough to think that you're going to get Vinatieri out there for a field goal before he'd throw an atrocious pick. And that's Tony Romo. So, you know, it wasn't a hard decision for Bill Belichick. He knew that he had a chance to have a franchise guy that could alter the franchise, or he could stay with the guy they just gave all the money to, who was always going to be good but never get you over the hump, and that's what you have in Dallas with Tony. So I hope at the end of the day that Jason Garrett puts his foot down and grows a pair and tells Jerry Jones that if you want me as the coach of this team, then I'm gonna ride with the rookie. I don't see that happening that way. So the Cowboys are a nice story right now, but it'll be interesting how that plays out down the stretch.
Don't forget that Drew Bledsoe of the Patriots was also Drew Bledsoe of the Cowboys. He was also replaced by Tony Romo, who was actually just the holder for two seasons before taking over, not really having any real quarterbacking experience. So that was actually a big leap of faith as well, but that was all the way back in 2006. So we're talking about 10 freaking years ago. So, you know, I agree with you. I think Romo's time has basically come. He's perpetually injured. Dak Prescott looks like the real deal. I mean, he can run that offense, and, you know, for a rookie, he is very solid. He has not thrown an interception yet this year. I mean, that is impressive to me. He has the eighth highest passer rating of all the starting quarterbacks this year. You know, he's better than the likes of Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, Andrew Luck. I mean, these are the guys that, you know, people thought were going to be in the elite category. But it's not. It's Dak Prescott who's up there. You know, I mean, he's just under Carson Wentz. So, you know, this is a guy who, I agree with you, he can really carry them going forward, and they don't need Romo anymore and his absolutely fragile bones. It doesn't make any sense for me that he held on to it. And you mentioned Ezekiel Elliott. Man, wow. That guy, he cannot be stopped. I mean, he started off a little bit slower at the beginning of the season, and now he's proven that he's everything that he was hyped to be. And it's been a while for me, I think, to see a dominant running back come into the NFL, and he's one of them. It's just amazing what he's done. So before we run out of time, I want to get to our new segment. So to our new segment, which is going to be Too Legit to Quit or Can't Touch This. And this is where we're going to talk about teams, players, what have you, and get our views on whether they're too legit or... All right, let's start with the first one. This is why we did did this. Let's talk about the Philadelphia Eagles. Too legit to quit or can't touch this, Ryan?
I'm going too legit to quit. I think they're gonna win the NFC East this year, and I think they're gonna be at least get through a round in the playoffs.
All right. So tell me. So let's go to the next one. Minnesota Vikings. Too legit to quit or can't touch.
Yeah, too legit to quit. I'm buying on the Vikings too. I think they also win their division, and I think that they're in the conference championship by the end of the year. Defense wins.
Okay, let's turn to the next game that we covered today, and that is the Atlanta Falcons and their surprising win over the Denver Broncos. What do you think? Too legit to quit, or can't touch this?
Oh, Matty Ice, can't touch this. Just wait. December and January is when he starts throwing picks. At a rate of 2-1 to his touchdowns, so that cliff is coming, Atlanta.
Yeah, well, Matty Ice, right at this point, though, having the highest passer rating in the NFL, 12 touchdowns to only 2 interceptions. I agree with you on that one. That's a no-brainer, at least for now, and at least until the rest of the end of the season. All right, let's get on to our last one, which is the Dallas Cowboys, which we just talked about. Too legit to quit or can't touch this.
I'm going to commit hot take crime here and play it right down the middle. If Dak Prescott stays in, then it's too legit to quit. If they go back to Romo, then it's can't touch this.
Wow. You really think that makes a big – you think Romo is going to be that much worse than Dak Prescott, huh?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he'll feed the ball to Dez, but that's about all he can do. And, at some point, his mistakes always cost that team.
So there we go. That's what we got. Let's get Ryan's view and everybody's view on some of the hot topics in NFL and whether they're too legit to quit or you can't touch this. So let's one more topic before we move on and end our podcast for this week. Tell me about what your thoughts are with the Carolina Panthers. They lost last night in one of the most horrific games I've ever seen. Tampa Bay 17, Carolina 14. Part of it was Derek Anderson, but part of it was just that they were just terrible on both ends, taking care of the ball and actually making sure they don't turn it over. So tell me, what do you think? Carolina Panthers, are they toast, or is it time for them to rebound for the rest of the season?
Like I said about the Houston Texans, sometimes it's good to be in a bad division. So at 1-4, normally I'd say toast. But if they can go on a winning streak, in a division again that should be won by a 9-7 team, and I know the Atlanta Falcons are, off to the start that they're off to. But as we just talked about, I don't see that as long lasting. However, with that said, I don't think the Carolina Panthers are a good football team right now. They can't cover. They're not tackling well. There's really no pass rush. They're injured in the backfield from their quarterback to Jonathan Stewart. You get your two leading rushers out, and for whatever reason, it appears through the first, couple years that they're a better team without Kelvin Benjamin than they are with him. And I don't know if it's because they feed him the ball too much or they're looking to him too much, but, I'm just saying from a win-loss standpoint, they're a better team when he's not on the field than when he's been on the field.
Wow. So you think that they are still poised, though, to come back because their competition is not that good? Is that what you're thinking?
I think they could, I'm a long way away from buying in on a comeback from them right now.
Okay, so that is all the time we have for this podcast. So go ahead, Ryan, tell us on Twitter so that people can follow you.
Yep, it is at Ryan Whitfield NE, and we are on to Cincinnati here in New England.
All right, and you can follow me at FB Garbage Time. And until next week, enjoy the rest of the NFL news and enjoy the rest of your NFL week.